It's Border Crossings with Larry London from VOA 1.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and welcome to a very special edition of Border Crossings. Today, we welcome a living legend who helped pave the way for male teen idols just like Justin Bieber, Bruno Mars, Nick Jonas, Shawn Mendes, and many others. Bobby Rydell was 19 six decades ago when he scored his first million-selling hit, Volare, and went on to amass 34 top 40 hits in the 1960s, including Sway, Forget Him, and many other songs. Starring in the film Bye Bye Birdie and performing on some of the biggest TV shows of that era, Bobby Rydell was on his way to becoming one of Philadelphia's best-known success stories. Bobby Rydell is on the road these days to promote his new book, Teen Idol on the Rocks, A Tale of Second Chances, in which he reveals how he faced death not once, but twice, and won. Two organ transplants and major heart surgery did not keep him from performing. Bobby is still a regular in Las Vegas and Atlantic City. Frank Sinatra once called Bobby one of his favorite singers, and Bobby joins us today to take a look back at his career and struggles. Join us today as we shine the spotlight on one of the golden boys of pop history, Bobby Rydell, on Border Crossings.
When she lifts the rhythm, start to play. Dance with me, make me sway. Like a lazy ocean, hugs the shore. Hold me close, sway me more. Like a flower bend.
I'd like to welcome Bobby Rydell to the Voice of America and to Washington, D.C.
Thank you ever so much, Larry. Pleasure.
It is great to have you here. Now, you have a new book, Teen Idol on the Rocks, A Tale of Second Chances. Now, why a book and why now?
Well, why a book? Okay, being on the road, you know, for, I guess it's close to six decades now, you know, and after a show, you would sit around, you talk to people, and stories come out. And I'm talking like a lot of years ago, and people would always say to me, Bobby, you have such wonderful stories. Why don't you write a book? And I would say, who wants to read a book about me, you know? But then, you know, through my lifetime and things that had happened, you know, I decided to get together with Mr. Slutsky, Alan Slutsky, who wrote and directed a movie called Standing in the Shadows of Motown about the Funk Brothers. And I've known Alan for, oh my God, 20 some odd years, marvelous musician. And I sat down with Alan and I just poured my heart out to him, and that was about 2 years in the making. He came to my house with a tape recorder, a pad, a pencil, you know, and started writing down things. And I said, well, if I'm going to do an autobiography, it's got to be, you know, brutally honest and very sincere and true, you know. And that's the way the book came out, Larry.
And you have had some big challenges in your life.
Yeah.
Many people face one.
Yeah.
And you have faced multiple challenges. You lost your wife, your first wife, who
yeah.
passed away, and that, I'm sure, was devastating.
Yeah. We were married 36 years, Larry. She was a girl from South Philadelphia, me being Italian, her being Italian, her name Camille, and unfortunately, she passed away in 2003 via breast cancer. And I was devastated. And, I mean, there was such a void, you know, after 36 years of being with the same woman, you know, going to bed, nobody there, nobody to talk to, nobody to laugh with, nobody to smile, nobody to cry, nobody to tell stories to. And unfortunately, that turned me to drinking, and I became a total alcoholic, and to the point where I was drinking so much that in 2012, July 9th of 2012, I needed a liver and a kidney. And coming this July the 9th, it'll be 4 years since my double transplant. Very lucky guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you are. You're lucky to be here.
Yeah, really.
And I think you said there were, in what I read, there was 14 people ahead of you, something like that.
Yeah, that exactly correct, Larry. I said to the doctor who was putting in the kidney, Dr. Romaris, and I said, you know what, Doc? I said, I thought that I was the primary, you know, recipient. He said, Bobby, he said, you weren't even the secondary. I said, well, you know, what do you mean by that? He said, there were 14 people in front of you waiting for a liver. 14 people turned down a partial liver. Hmm. And the liver that I have, and this little girl in Philadelphia, her name is Asaya. She was 4 years old at the time. Now she's 8 years old. We split our donor's liver. I got 75%. She got 25%.
Wow.
And I don't know where those other 14 people are today because, you know, I guess most of the people said, no, I don't want to, you know, split, you know, I want a full, you know, full liver. Mm-hmm. Because a full liver is kind of easy, you know, as far as surgery is concerned. It's like a battery. You take out the old battery, put in the new one,
and hook
it up, and there you go. When you are splitting a liver, it takes a pretty good surgeon, you know, to do that. And I was very, very lucky. I had a man by the name of Cataldo Doria mm-hmm. at Jefferson Hospital in Philadelphia, and he was marvelous. Mm.
You couldn't say to the doc, hey, come on, it's me, Bobby Rydell. You know,
No.
Sing Sway.
No, really, Larry, you're right. he didn't even know who I was.
Uh-huh.
And he went home to his wife. And he said, and he spoke broken, you mm-hmm. know. He said, I'm operating on the Bobby Rydell. And the wife went crazy. Mm. Bobby Rydell.
Bobby Rydell?
He didn't know.
What's the matter with you?
And we became really good friends after that.
Did you meet the family of the
I met the mother. Uh-huh. Yeah. And, you know, with an organization called the Gift of Life, you're not supposed to get in touch with the particular donor until about a year, mm-hmm. you know, after, the accident. Her name was Julia, mm-hmm. my donor. And we finally, after a year, we got in touch with her. I invited her to one of the shows, and it was hard. It was really hard.
Hmm. Not only did you have double organ transplant, you've had bypass surgery.
Yeah.
You have been through, like I say, what most people could never survive, all the things you've done.
Oh, you want to talk about my surgeries?
I do. Let's talk about you. Let's compare scars.
Okay, let's see. Two back surgeries.
Wow.
What's the diverticulitis?
Yeah.
I had that. A shoulder. My humerus broke. So I had to put a bone in here, and then I have a hip replacement. Now a new liver and a new kidney, and I had a double bypass surgery in 2013, a year after the double transplant.
So you're the bionic.
I am bionic. You're right.
But it's amazing that, you know, and you still continue to perform, and you still work hard, and you're doing all the shows you do. You haven't slowed down.
No, not at all. You know, and I, once again, you know, so fortunate because, you know, when the transplant happened, and of course there's a lot of tubes down your throat, and I'm saying to myself, I'm laying in bed, you know, in the hospital, I'm going, wow, you know, am I ever going to be able to, you know, really sing again? And I got back home, and I got Alan Slutsky and a kid by the name of Craig Thomas, bass player, and Joe Nero on drums. And I said, come over the house. I just want to see if I can do anything. And we just did tunes, you know. We did, like, Volati and Sway and Wild One. And then we did, like, The Shadow of Your Smile, you know, some really nice tunes. And I was, like, okay. And I turned to Craig Thomas, the bass player. I said, Craig, I said, truthfully, man, I said, how do I sound? He said, I don't know, man. Sounds like Bobby Rydell to me. And then a friend of mine, Lucy O.C., had a big 18-piece orchestra at a place called a jazz club in Philly called the Clef Club. And I asked Lou, I said, would you mind getting the guys together? I want to see if I can do my show. And Lou said, no problem. You know, we were born and raised, you know, next door neighbors, you know, in South Philadelphia. And he's a barber by trade, but, a jazz trumpet player. And he got the band together, and I did my show. And, like, pow, it came out. I went, wow. I was so happy, you know. And then about 6 months after the surgery, I did my first appearance in Las Vegas, bang, like that. Whereas, you know, as I said just earlier, I kind of like went through the trenches.
Right.
You know, I kind of like paid my dues, you know.
And then Sinatra called you one of his favorites.
I mean, yeah, well, you know what? Well, God rest both their souls. You know, Frank Jr. just passed away, and I was very close with Jr. and with Mr. Sinatra as well. And I said to Frank Jr., I said, thank you ever so much for that nice compliment that you paid me. You know, about one of my favorite singers. And Frank Jr. said, I never said that. I said, yes, you did. I read it, you know, or heard. You know. He said, no, my father said that.
That old black magic has me in its spell. That old black magic that you were. Weave so well those icy fingers up and down my spine. The same old witchcraft when your eyes meet mine. I love them so, yeah. That same old tingle that I feel inside. And then that elevator starts to fly. And darling, down and down I go. Round and round I go. Like a leaf that's caught in a tide. Yeah, I should stay away, but what can I do? I hear your name, and I'm aflame. Oh, aflame with such a burning desire. Hey, that lay off kiss, kiss, can't put out the fire. Well, now you're the lover I have. You're the mate that fate had me created for. And every time your lips meet mine, yo, down and down I go. And around I go. In a spin, loving a spin that I'm in. Under that old, a black magic of love. Okay, one more time, yeah. Down and down I go. Oh, round and round I go. I'm in a spin. And I'm loving that spin that I'm in. And I'm that oh, like a magical lover. Yeah, I'm in that like a magical lover. I keep on talking about the black gold magic. Yes, baby, I got love. Oh, yeah, I love that thing. I got a black magic.
I said, oh, okay.
A bigger honor.
That was nice. Yeah.
So, I mean, Bobby Rydell, what is it? Would you say that it was easier to get in the business when you were starting or today? I mean, if you compare the nature of the business.
Tough question. I really don't know which era would have been tougher. I mean, when I met my first manager, it was at a place called Bay Shores in Atlantic City. He was a bass player with a band called Billy Duke and the Dukes. And I filled in. Frankie Avalon called me because the drummer, Chippy Brancata, was sick. And I've known Frankie since, you know, I was 10 years old. You know, Frankie's a couple of years older than me. And he called me. He said, Bobby, would you come and sit in and play, you know, if we get Chippy? Yeah, no problem. So I met my first manager, Frankie Day, who played bass with Billy Duke and the Dukes. He said, I want to manage you. I was like 14 years old. I said, I don't know what you're talking about. Talk to my father. You know, my father was standing right beside me. Yada, yada, yada. We never signed a contract. We just shook hands, and he took me around. RCA, Capitol, you know, the auditioned, and all turned downs. And then we finally went home to Philadelphia. A man by the name of Bernie Lowe, who was the president of Cameo, the label that I recorded on. And I recorded, he signed me to a contract. And I had three songs for Bernie back then for Cameo, and they all bombed. They did nothing. I said, well, this is really not for me, man. You know, I was really happy playing drums. I really enjoyed playing the instrument, you know. And then we got lucky in 1959 with a song called Kissin' Time, and that became my first hit.
We're kissing in Cleveland, Kansas City tea. They're wailing in Wildwood, back in Waterloo. They're scooching on lovers, even in St. Louis. So, baby, get ready, I'm kissing you. Oh, baby, cause summertime is a kissing time, USA. So treat me right, gonna make me fight the battle of New Orleans tonight. They're kissing on beaches, the shiny sea, smooching on benches neath the kissing tree. Lipstick on collar down in Tennessee. I saw my baby come on now and start kissing me. Oh, oh, cause summertime is a kissing time, USA. I saw fresh on tasty lips to mine, sweeter than wine, and it feels so fine. And driving you to Baltimore, rocking and dancing, land and sea and shore.
I don't know what, you know, is it harder? Was it harder then or harder today? I don't know. With all of the social media, I would imagine it's probably easier today.
Mm. Does it seem like more of a business today than it was? I mean, now artists get one shot, whereas you had a little bit longer, a couple of singles. They try a B-side and, you know, whatever. Today, it's, you know, you're on American Idol. You got one album. It doesn't sell. You're done.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very true. Once again, you know, being a very, very lucky guy. I remember Bernie Lowe, you know, when after Kissin' Time, and then my second record was a song called We Got Love, which went into the top 10 in Cashbox and Billboard. And Bernie said to me, he says, okay, you got two. He said, now the next one is going to be harder, and the next one after that is going to be even harder yet. And, you know, it's very, very true. You have to come up with the great material. And I was fortunate enough to be able to be with them, a Bernie Lowe, a Cal Mann, and a Dave Apple, who were like the powers that be at the Cameo Records. And, you know, they were very instrumental in my career as far as, you know, the type of material that I recorded.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you write or...
No, I wish I did. I'd be living in Tahiti now. With all the publishing, you know, BMI-esque.
Is there ever a song that came your way that you said, nah, I'm not going to do that, that you wish you hadn't said that?
No. When I went into the studio, matter of fact, we were doing, remember the old Dick Clark Saturday Night Show emanated out of New York City, Beach mm-hmm. Nut Show, you know? Mm-hmm. And Dave Apple, who always had a pipe in his mouth and a guitar in his hands. He played guitar. He was a marvelous guitar player as well. And we're driving back from New York in a limo, and we're in the back seat, and Dave's got the pipe in his mouth, and he said, when we get back home, Bob, he said, this is the next recording we're going to do. And he started, and became Wild One, which became my first million seller. So, you know, anything that they threw in front of me, I figured, you know, I didn't know if it was a hit. You know, there were good tunes, yeah. And you know, as far as musically and the girls in the background, they were all marvelous. I didn't know if they were going to be hit records. They sounded good to me. And I was, you know, fortunate enough to have a, as you said earlier, a string of 34, 35, you know,
you've had
records.
Many, many, many hits and influenced so many, many people over the years. And you've sold, I think, 25 million plus records worldwide and continue to tour and perform. You perform worldwide? You still go out of the States?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Matter of fact, I've been to Australia about the last time I was there was 2014. That was my 23rd visit.
Wow.
Yeah, my first appearance there was with the Everly Brothers, and we worked in an arena in Sydney called the Sydney Stadium. And, I mean, I just love that country. I mean, the people are wonderful. The food is fantastic, you know. And the fans, I mean, I've got a good base of fans here, you know, in the States. But over in Australia, I mean, since 1960 to today, I mean, you know, I'd land and they're at the shows and they have banners. You know, like, Bobby, you come back like a boomerang, mate. You know, we love you, mate. You know. And there's three girls who travel all over. They're Australian, from Melbourne, but they'll go to Sydney, they'll go to Perth, they'll go to Adelaide, they'll go to Brisbane. You know, they just want to see every show. And they sing. They sing the background music. If I sing Wild One, I'm going to tame you down, they go, tame you down. Three girls in their front. I call them my three crazies. You know? I mean, they're great fans.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Well, you've had, I mean, obviously, doing what you've been doing for as long as you've been doing it, you've seen fans grow up. You've seen the next generation of their families. You must have a great relationship with all your fans.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and I think that comes out, you know, very, very true in the book. A lot of the reviews that I've been seeing on, let's say, an Amazon, you know, are 90% of them are all 5-star reviews, and basically a lot of people, And every one of those five-star reviews say, you know, it's almost like he's sitting here talking to me, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's the way the book came off, you know. And that was all because of Slutsky as well, because mm-hmm. he knew me. He knew me for, you know, 20-some-odd years. So it was... was very, very easy talking to him.
Well, you're a very nice, likable person, and
thank you.
Really, I mean, there's a lot of people who are successful, but you know, it's changed them, and you seem like you haven't changed a whole lot.
Well, thank you, Larry. I appreciate that, and I think that you know that all stems from family. You know, my grandparents came from the old country in Italy.
Why do you think back then everybody was Italian? You mentioned your parents came over. It was Frankie Avalon and Frankie Valli. It was you. Frank Sinatra, everybody was Italian.
Well, all of the singers were Italian. All of the comedians were Jewish. That's the way I think there was only one guy out of South Philadelphia who made it and wasn't Italian, and that was Eddie Fisher. He came from 5th and Moyamensing, which is not far from my old neighborhood. Right. I was 11th and Moyamensing, you know, only about six blocks away. Yeah, but Mario Lanza, Al Martino, Buddy Greco, Jimmy Darin, whose real name is Ercolani, Frankie Avalon, who's Avalone, Fabian Forte, me, Bobby Rydell, Robert Louis Ritterelli. And I think there was a water trough that we all drank out of. And if you drank out of that water trough, you became a singer.
Well, lucky for the world that you did drink out of that water, because you gave us some very, very big hit records. And I want to talk specifically about them, because I know there are stories behind each song that you have sung over the years.
Okay.
Like, for example, Forget Him.
Yeah.
Tell me about that song. I mean,
Forget Him.
Were you trying to win a girl over? Was there something going on?
You know, I was over it in London, and I had just made a motion picture with Anne Margaret, and that was Bye Bye Birdie.
Yeah,
I played Hugo, and she played Kim. And a matter of fact, she called me just a couple of weeks ago, and she read the book. And I was in the shower. I was working in Florida at a place called The Villages. And so I come out of the shower, and I see there's a voicemail. And I play the voicemail, and she says, "That's not your real name. Your real name is Ridarelli, or Hugo. Hi, Bobby, it's Anne. I just read your book. I didn't know what you went through. God bless you. And, you know, please give me a call. You have my cell number," which I do. And we've talked back and forth since 1963. Mm-hmm. Every couple of months, she'll go, "Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing?" So I'm leaving Orlando with my drummer, David, and I said, I'm going to call Anne. And we had a great conversation, right? And at the end of the conversation, I said, "Anne, 1963, I was 20. You were 21. Why didn't we get married?" She started laughing. But I was there, you know, for a command performance, Bye Birdie. Did 2 weeks of touring with a girl by the name of Helen Shapiro, a very, very fine singer in the UK. And while there, I recorded with a gentleman, his name Tony Hatch. And Tony Hatch is a marvelous songwriter. He wrote songs like Downtown for Petula Clark, Call Me, a very pretty bossa nova by Chris Montez. And there was a blog not too very long ago, like a couple of 3 days ago. And Tony Hatch was one of the guys. He said, I specifically wrote Forget Him for Bobby Rydell. And we recorded it in London. And Bernie Lowe, Cal Mann, and Dave Apple, it wasn't their material. They didn't want to release it because there was no publishing rights. It wasn't Lowe, Mann, and Apple. It was Tony Hatch, right? And some disc jockey up in Canada, Toronto, Canada, Chum Radio, his name was Dave Johnson. He started playing Forget Him up in Toronto. And from Toronto, it kind of leaked on down into Detroit. And, you know, then it spread. And then they were forced, you know, Cameo was forced to release Forget Him. And it became my third million seller. Forget him. Forget him. Forget him. If he doesn't love you, forget him. If he doesn't care, don't let him tell you that he wants you, 'cause he can't give you love which isn't there. Oh, little girl, he's never dreaming of you. He'll break your heart
wait and see. So don't you cry now, just tell him goodbye now, forget him, and please come home to me.
You also were up for The Graduate, a role that Dustin Hoffman ended up getting.
If you remember a show called Combat with Vic Morrow, and our episode was called The Duel. It was Vic Morrow, me, a German tank. That was it. And I was under a truck for the whole half hour of the show. And he was marvelous to work with. And the casting director was a guy by the name of Lynn Stallmaster. And evidently he liked what I did, you know, on Combat, and he threw me this script. He said, Bobby, I want you to read this, and then, you know, once you, you know, get involved with the script, you know, in a couple of days, give me a call. I want you to come and sit and read, you know, the script with me. And the script was The Graduate. And I did. I read. I went in front of Lynn Stallmaster. Lynn Stallmaster, in return, went to Mike Nichols, who was the producer-director of The Graduate. He said, Bobby Rydell just gave me one heck of a reading. And Mike Nichols, from what I understand, he was kind of hemmed and hawed. You know, he's not what I'm looking for. And there came Dustin Hoffman.
Right. Know.
But at least I read for it.
There you
know.
And you, are you in another film coming out? Or
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I really don't know how this happened, but it happened. And the director, Taylor Hackford, who did The Idolmaker, the Ray Charles story, he wanted me. The scene takes place at an autograph convention, and I'm sitting next to Robert De Niro, right? And Taylor Hackford comes into the makeup room. He introduces himself, and he says, Bobby, he says, I'm a big fan. About my age, 74, you know, something like that. And I said, well, thank you, Mr. Hackford. He says, you know the scene, don't you? I said, yeah, it's an autograph thing. Mr. De Niro's sitting to my right, and, you know, people come up and ask for an autograph. He said, yeah, that's basically it. But I may have, you know, once we get on set, I may have a few ideas. Well, I didn't know what he was, you know, really talking about, you know. So we get on set, and all of a sudden I got five lines with De Niro. It's great. It's really, and De Niro, he is so laid back. What a nice guy. He came out. I was sitting, you know, at the autograph desk, and he came out, and he looked at me. He put out his hand. He said, Bobby. I said, yes. He said, Robert De Niro.
Really? I think I know you.
Yeah, right. I said, my pleasure, Mr. De Niro. He said, so what are you doing now? You're president of your own company? You know, I said, no, Robert. I said, I'm still singing. Oh, good. And it's most of my good scenes are on the editing room floor. You know, I certainly hope they keep it in the picture because it's, you know, it's a quick, maybe, you know, five lines. What is that? 30 seconds on film, you know, whatever. But yeah, it was, even if they cut me out, you know, it was a pleasure just to be in his company and Taylor Hackford's company. And who knows? I mean, he did The Idolmaker. He did the Ray Charles movie. He reads the book. You never know.
Now, I mean, what is the name of the De Niro film, and when is it supposed to come out?
It's called The Comedian.
The Comedian.
It's something that he's been wanting to do for years, right?
And he did something like that off the wall with Jerry Lewis. World's Funniest Man, or I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
Something.
But it takes place, he's supposed to have like a sitcom. and like an Archie Bunker type of thing. And the sitcom gets canceled. So now he wants to become a stand-up comedian. And he's, the stand-up comedian is more or less like a Don Rickles, you know, the type of guy. So, like I said, he's been wanting to do this for God knows how many years. I guess he finally got the backing. And it'll probably be out later this year or early 2017, called The Comedian.
All right. We'll be looking for it. Now, the book, Teen Idol on the Rocks, A Tale of Second Chances, when the book becomes a bestseller, which it will, and then they ultimately say, we're going to make the movie of the book. We're going to make the story of Bobby Rydell. Who do you want to play Bobby Rydell?
I knew you were coming. And Alan Slutsky, he called me a couple of 3 days ago, and he said, Bob, if we're lucky enough, you know, to this ever becomes, you know, a screenplay movie, who would you want to play you? And he said, Justin Bieber. I said, what? Are you kidding? Guy's nuts. He's out of his mind.
That's right.
You know, so I don't know who would, you know, I really don't know, you know.
But Bobby Rydell is our guest, and he's on a book signing tour in addition to your performing as well. Teen Idol on the Rocks, A Tale of Second Chances. The book is available online, Amazon.
Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can also go to BobbyRydellBook.com.
And as far as, I mean, the career goes, so you continue to work very hard, which is kind of, you know, just remarkable given the things you've encountered, the challenges.
I'm really happy to be working this hard, truthfully.
Now, when you're up on stage and you're performing, you throw in some new stuff? Are you working any new material?
You know, I've always, you know, since my, well, my dad, you know, took me at a very early age, 5 years old, you know, to see Krupa and Benny Goodman Band, I started listening to that kind of music. You know, I listened to big band. I think about 10, 11 years old, I really got interested in Sinatra when I was 10, 11 years old. Then I became a jazz nut. I loved people like Johnny Coltrane and Philly Joe Jones and Miles Davis, you know. So I was never really a rock and roller. You know, I never listened to rock and roll, but that's what made my career. You know, I was fortunate enough to record, you know, those great records that I had on Cameo. So to answer your question, you know, of course, you know, when I'm on stage now, I do a lot of the hits, you know, Volare, Sway, Wild One, We Got Love, and Forget Him. But then I do a lot of songs from the American Songbook. And you can just pick, you know, from the American Songbook, just pick any song. You know, there's just, you know, songs that were written in the late 30s, early 40s, you know, just great pieces of material, which I love to do.
Would you do a songbook album? I know Rod Stewart's done one. There's been, you know, a number of people, Barry Manilow, a lot
if
of people.
If anybody's interested
stuff.
Out there, you can call 610-66.
Now, Grease is you know, Rydell High. Was that named for you?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I went to see the movie because Frankie Avalon was in the movie.
Right.
Was,
Beautiful Dropout.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no,
the Guardian Angel.
He was Teen Angel.
Teen Angel,
right?
Yeah.
And he does that in his show, too.
Does he?
Tune, the Beauty School Dropout. Yada, yada, yada. So I went to see the movie, you know, and basically because Frankie was in it.
Right.
You know? And boom, Rydell High. He said,
wow. Whoa.
What a nice.
Bada boom, bada bang.
Bada boom, bada bang. You know what I'm talking about. And it was wonderful. I said, you know, why me? You know, Everly High, Presley High, Fabian High, Anka High. They picked Rydell.
They love you. They love that you got a street named after you back home in Philly.
Yeah, back home, Bobby Rydell Boulevard.
That's cool.
It's my old neighborhood, 11th and Moya Mensing, which it stretches from the 2400 block to the 2500 block of 11th Street. And Fabian was on the 2500 block. We were born and raised a half a block away from one another.
Now, who gave you the name Rydell? How'd
my
you
dad.
Come up with that? He picked that name?
Earlier in the press, you know, when I was 17, 18, they said that Paul Whiteman gave me my, because I was 10 years old when I did his show. It was called the Paul Whiteman TV Teen Club. Gave young talent a chance to get a break in the business. And as far as the media was concerned, they always said that Mr. Whiteman had a hard time pronouncing Ritterelli. So he called me Rydell. Well, no, it was just for the press. My dad came up with Rydell because the nuns in school, Ritterelli, Master Rydelli, yeah, they didn't know how to pronounce Ritterelli either. Yeah.
Now, I mentioned on the program that you were coming on the air, and I got a bunch of questions sent in to me, and I got a listener in Germany, and I guess you're very popular in Germany and probably a performer there. This person asked, the strangest place you've ever encountered a groupie or fan over the years? Somebody stowaway on a tour bus or something like that? Do you ever have one of those?
Yeah. Yeah, matter of fact, there was one.
Maybe this woman wrote in, it was her. Who knows?
Who knows? Yeah. I remember it was on the Dick Clark Caravan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was 6 weeks on a bus with the Coasters, the Platters, Dion, Lloyd Price, Annette, you know, traveling on a bus. And we were in Peoria, Illinois. And this one girl, after the show, you know, signing autographs, she says, "Bobby, I want to come with you." I said, "It's impossible." I said, "We're doing a different city every night. You know, mm-hmm. Just stay home. Take care of yourself. Don't go crazy." She stowed away on the bus in the luggage compartment. And they found her. They found her in the luggage compartment. The next city, wherever the heck we were going from Peoria, you know. And they said, "You got to get back home." You know. So I guess that was probably the strangest thing. You know.
Did you ever work with Elvis?
I never met him. Never met the man. You know. I enjoyed a lot of his stuff. But I never had the good fortune. In my lifetime and in my career, although I didn't meet Elvis, I worked with people like George Burns and Jack Benny and Red Skelton, Mr. Sinatra, Perry Como, Milton Berle.
You were on the Ed Sullivan show too.
I was watching that video. Yeah,
and
absolutely. Yeah.
Some of the, we were wearing a suit and playing drums. And
I think that was the Skelton show.
Oh, okay. And they even had a character for you Red Skelton.
Yeah.
Right?
Matter of fact, the producer of the show was a man by the name of Cecil Barker.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in the studio, CBS Television City, and he says, "I understand you do impersonation of one of Red's characters." I said, "Yes, I do. I do Clem Kiddlehopper." He said, "Can I hear it?" And I went, and Mr. Skelton was over rehearsing with David Rose, the orchestra. And he hears me, and he starts coming back at me. Anyway, make a long story short, I was one of the only guests on the Red Skelton Hour that ever imitated one of his characters. So the show was, he played Clem Kiddlehopper, and I was his cousin, Zeke. And he was, he was so nice to me. I mean, he lost his son Richard at a very early age, and I think he took me under his arm, mm-hmm. and he treated me like a son. Hmm. He invited me out to his home in Palm Springs after one of the tapings, and his wife said to me, "Bobby, I can count on one hand the number of people that Red has invited to his house here." And, he was just that nice, mm-hmm. And I took my kids to see him. And, one of the great things he does was the mime stuff, and the one thing that I always loved that he did was the old man watching the parade and the American flag go by. Well, he started crying,
right.
And my son and my daughter said to my wife, Camille, "What's that? What's he?" And my wife said, "You don't know how much that man,
I see it's touching you very deeply.
So, go backstage. And I said, at one time I called him Mr. Skelton, and he called me Mr. Rydell. And then it became Red and Bobby, So we went backstage. I said, "Red, I said, you did it again." He said, "What did I do?" I said, "You made me cry." He said, "Was I that bad?" So he was absolutely wonderful. Hmm. Really, really. I was very close with him.
Hmm. And the troops are tuned in right now, speaking of the 4th of July and patriotism and whatnot.
Absolutely.
And they're listening, America celebrating its birthday. And
I was in the military.
I did not know that.
I took my basic training 1964, Fort Dix, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And I was National Guard. When my home unit was 103rd Combat Engineer Battalion. And what we basically did was build and blow bridges. And if you remember, McNamara was Secretary of Defense back then. He started activating a lot of National Guard troops. I looked at the guys. I said, "We're gone."
Yep.
I said, "What do they need in Nam? Build and blow bridges, man." I said, "We're gone." Luckily, our unit never got activated. But I was fortunate enough in 1967 to go over to Nam for a month and to entertain. Mm. And it was wonderful. I had two go-go girls, Frankie Day, my manager, played bass. Georgie Woods was big disc jockey in Philadelphia. He came, and we went to play Ku, Wan K, Quinyan, Kantum, Banbi Tuwit, Fan Rang, The Trang. I was all over the joint. Mm. And it's an experience that, you know, I just treasure, you know, just to see those guys and being military, you know, just to be able to have them sit down for like an hour and not worry. I did one show in Khartoum for 8 Green Berets. That was it. 8 Green Berets on a tennis court. And my manager, Frankie, picked this one song that I would do, you know, in Nam. And this was the song. What kind of fool am I who never fell in? And I'm singing this song, and all of a sudden it seems that I'm the... Don't worry, Bob. It's outgoing.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's
outgoing.
It's not incoming. It's outgoing mail. Outgoing. It's not incoming, you know.
Did you ever do a Bob Hope U.S.
No, no, no. I got into places with a Bob Hope. I mean, I worked for 8 guys in Khartoum on a tennis court.
Yeah. Well, for a guy who's done this now for 6 decades,
yeah,
highlight for you. I mean, I'm amazed at how sharp the man's mind. 74. I can't recall what I had for lunch yesterday, and you know the names and the places and the dates.
No. I have a good memory, but it's short. You know, I can remember a long time. I don't, like you just said, I don't even remember if I had breakfast today. I'm sorry.
What? A career highlight. Oh, something that, I'm sure there's many for you. But
absolutely. I mean, you know, doing the command performance for the royal family with Anne Margaret and myself. But I would say to top them all, when I was 19 years old, I met Sinatra at the Copacabana. And he was in the audience. I was in there with my dad and my manager, and a guy by the name of Joey Lewis was the entertainer. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Sinatra made a movie called The Joker is Wild about, and it was Joey Lewis's life. So at the end of the show, Blue Eyes flews the coop, you know, and I said, well, that's it. I blew it.
That's it.
I'll never see that guy again. I go upstairs to say goodnight to Jules Padel, who was like the front of the Copacabana, about 4'5", had no neck, talk like this, you know. You know. So through the kitchen doors comes Sinatra. I said, Uncle Julie. I said, all I want to do is shake his hand. You want me a Frank? I said, yeah, I'd love to. Now, Frank Sinatra is sitting with Sammy Kahn, Jimmy Van Heusen, Richard Conti, and Joe DiMaggio.
Hmm. Whoa.
And Podell hits Sinatra on the shoulder. He said, Frank, I want you to meet the kid. This is all in the book. Sinatra stood up with them blue eyes, put out his hand. He said, how you doing, Robert? Called me Robert. I said, I'm fine, Mr. Sinatra. How are you? He said, I'm wonderful. Would you care to join us? It'd be my pleasure. Now, I sat down there, Larry. I'm like a goof. You know, I'm not saying two words.
19 years old.
I'm 19 years old. Whoa. You know, I'm in awe. I'm not only Sinatra, but Sammy Kahn, Jimmy Van Heusen, Richard Conti, Joe DiMaggio. And then Sinatra turned to me about a couple of minutes. He said, what do you drink, Robert? I said, Coke. Figure if I said scotch and water, it would smack me in the face, you know. But, you know, in the book, you know, it's a great picture. Mm-hmm. I think, let me see, he has his left arm around me, and under his right arm, he has my album, Rydell at the Copa, and it's autographed to Bobby. Mm. Best always, you know, your friend, Frank Sinatra.
And you became the youngest to play the Copa.
I was 19 years old, I was the youngest actor who ever played a Copa.
That's amazing. Now, you know, here's another emailed question to ask you. Looking back, any regrets? Did you do something you wish you could undo?
Yes. I remember I was supposedly going to take Robert Klein's place in their Playing Our Song, the Broadway show, they're Playing Our Song. So my manager and I, we went to whatever the theater was in New York, and I'm watching the play. And from what I could gather, it was the girls. It was the girls' part, and they're playing our song. You know, Robert Klein, you know, other than where he sang, they're playing my song, they're playing my song. And that was Neil Simon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I said, nah, I don't want to do this. Yeah. First of all, they wouldn't guarantee New York. They're talking about Detroit, Chicago, you know, Los Angeles. Not Broadway,
right?
You know,
right.
Not New York,
Broadway.
Not the lights, you know, not the lights. And I told Frankie Day, I said, no, I don't want to do this. You know, well, Who knows?
That's
you know,
it.
if I would have
who knew?
You know, if I would have done that show, mm-hmm. who knows? Neil Simon probably would have said, "Hey, I'd like to write a part, you know, do a movie."
There you,
know?
You go.
Maybe I could have been one of the Odd Couple. You know, I don't know.
Is Bobby Rydell in our studios? Get a copy of his book, Teen Idol on the Rocks: A Tale of Second Chances. And you know, the music is timeless; it's ageless. Now, when you're performing, what's your favorite song to sing? I mean, out of your catalog, when you
you love them all, I know. You know, I was fortunate enough, you know, to have, you know, really, you know, some decent sounding records, you mm-hmm. know, melodically and
great
musically,
songs.
You know, absolutely. But I would say, you know, out of all of them, my signature song, which is my walk on and my walk off music, as far as bowels are concerned, is Volare.
Volare.
Yeah.
A song that's been done by many people, and your version was, you know, a number one hit.
Well, you had Domenico Modugno, mm-hmm. who wrote and recorded the song. He had a hit in the early 50s.
Dean Martin.
Then Dean, God rest his soul, Dean Martin mm-hmm. Recorded it. And we needed a song. We needed a record. I was coming off a song called Swingin' School. And we had taped in New York City to do an album. But the album was never released. But the songs that we did in New York were Volare, Sway, and Old Black Magic. So Bernie Lowe went back and listened to the tapes that we did in New York City because we needed a record. We mm-hmm. needed a record. After Swingin' School, he puts out Volare. And it becomes my second million song.
Leave the confusion and all disillusion behind.
Yeah, 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 all behind.
Just like birds of a feather, a rainbow together we'll find. Volare, whoa, cantare, whoa. My happy heart sings. Your love has given me wings. Star that I know of, where lovers enjoy peace of mind. Let us leave the confusion and all disillusion behind.
Yeah, 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 all behind.
Just like birds of a feather, a rainbow together we'll find.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's been an honor to have you on the show.
Thank you, Larry.
You know, I've loved your music. As I mentioned, you know, off air before, I saw you, the Boys of Bandstand. I remember seeing you and Fabian and Frankie Avalon perform
the Golden Boys.
The Golden Boys of Bandstand.
But sometimes the G falls off, and it's the Olden Boys.
What a pleasure to meet you. You're one of the best, really.
Thank you.
And we love your music. And this book is great. It's a great read. Teen Idol on the Rocks, A Tale of Second Chances, available at Amazon and also your website.
BobbyRydell.com and Barnes & Noble.
And you're on Facebook?
I think so. Facebook, Twitter.
He's all over the place.
Hullabaloo.
And make sure you check him out when his tour comes through your part of the world. Thank you, Bobby Rydell.
My pleasure, Larry. Thank you.
This is the Voice of America. I'm Larry London. Stay tuned.